calling for is the appointment of a completely independent special prosecutor to oversee this case, preferably someone from outside the state of Minnesota with a strong national reputation, a person who's credible, a person who is known for being fair and just.
We have 10 seconds.
In cases like this.
Nikema Levy-Armstrong, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Civil rights attorney, activist, founder of the Racial Justice Network, former president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Working with as few people on site as possible. The majority of our remarkable team is working from home. If you'd like to sign up for our daily digest, our daily newsletter, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Libby Rainey, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Tammy Warrenoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamer Astudio. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 7:59 a.m. Next up, we have the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
Good morning. Hey, I didn't get shot. I'm okay.
Glad to hear it.
Mainly because I didn't go anywhere.
I'm also glad to hear it. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Program, 90.7 KBOO FM here in Portland and the greater Portland area and the extended region. Things are weird, Joe.
Yeah, they're very weird. They're very scary, and we have a madman in the White House. He's the kind of guy who hides in the basement when the crowd shows up. And it's really important to understand that what's going on now is marginally, maybe even scarily legal. I did some research. I want to quickly go through where it is legally that the president is claiming the right to use U.S. troops in states that do not necessarily call for them. And it's very important to understand this. It's also important to understand that George Floyd was not just killed by the guy with the knee on his neck. There were four officers holding him down. He was literally suffocated to death by four, not one, individuals. No question about it. So I got to tell people, this is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, and that's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call, and you're welcome to call, is 231-8187. Let me just run through some of this stuff so you
Before we do that, let's set this up a little bit. I'm sure most people are quite familiar with the way things have gone over the last week or so in this country. But nevertheless, let's set that up.
Okay.
You mentioned George Floyd.
You're a careful man. I appreciate that.
Well, I think it's very important, and here's why. And I want people to bear this in mind throughout today's conversation. We live in a... Barbara Springsteen now is a very rapidly changing situation. We know much that is true, much that has transpired, and we know much that is not true. We need to be very careful to avoid spreading misinformation here. We need to be very careful to avoid drawing premature conclusions from what we are seeing. We're going to talk, I hope, about what we can verify, what has been observed, and what has been reported by journalistic outlets around the country. I imagine we'll also indulge in some speculation, but we need to be very clear that that's exactly what we're doing.
Oh, I don't know.
Agreed.
No.
Okay. No.
No. No. I'm going to take it a little bit further than you want to take it, and you can correct me and argue about it. But first, I'm going to start out here.
That's true. I'm not done yet, though. Hang on. George Floyd, There's a black man in Minneapolis, Minnesota, murdered by the police a little more than a week ago after he had been arrested for trying to pass off a counterfeit $20 bill in a convenience store. As Joe mentioned, he was killed by asphyxiation, by a knee to the neck from a Minneapolis police officer that was placed there and the pressure exerted for nearly 8 minutes until Mr. Floyd died. All the while, other police officers looked on and a group of civilians gathered, urging the officers to cease what they're doing because clearly Floyd is in distress.
I want to make clear, they didn't just look on. It turns out the other three periodically were putting pressure on his back, on his neck, on other parts of his body. He was squeezed to death, not just at the neck.
Yeah, he was murdered. He was coldly and deliberately murdered by a man who, by all appearances, knew what he was doing and continued to do it until Mr. Floyd expired.
Okay.
This was a cop who was not on the scene initially, who arrived after the fact. This was also a cop with a repeated history of disciplinary complaints levied against him by the Minneapolis Police Department. So
also important. The police in Minneapolis have a very deserved reputation for brutality toward African Americans.
This is absolutely true. And I want to dig into that a little deeper later on in the show.
Sure.
Since that time, protests have sprung up across the country in major cities, including Portland. Those protests have been largely violent. There have been bad actors on both sides of the equation. I can see that I'm going to come in for fire for saying this already. But I want to be very clear about this. I think the lion's share of the blame in these confrontations across the country is to be laid at the feet of uniformed law enforcement officers. We're going to, in a few minutes, get into some of the many incidents of unprovoked violence that the police have instigated across the country. Now, that having been said, there are people who have been taking advantage of what have been otherwise peaceful protests to do some looting. You may have your own opinions about that sort of behavior, and we can talk about that on the show. But I want to be very clear. Most of the violence is the fault of the police in this situation. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I want to focus on the law right now.
Okay.
Because I think that's extremely important, because there are both precedents for what President Trump wants to do, and there are real legal questions about the legality of what he wants to do. So I'm going to walk us through some law. And I want you all to be patient and to actually really carefully pay attention. In 1807, an insurgency law essentially gave the right for a president to use force in certain circumstances. That law was ironically nullified by a decision which was designed to keep the federal troops in the South after the Civil War from helping African Americans gain their freedom. This is that law. That is the law that changed from 1807 to 1892 under the leadership of President Hayes, essentially changed into something called the Posse Comitatus Law, which said the United States Armed Forces cannot operate as an armed force in the United States of America, period. And that undid the 1807 law. This was the status of things. But as I began to look through the law, I discovered that, in fact, the 1807 law has been used. For example, in the Rodney King case, the President of the United States used that law, invoked that law, to establish order in the rioting situation in Los Angeles. So it remains to be something decided by the courts. However, it is clear, at least to me and to many other people, I talked to several lawyers about this, that the Posse Comitatus Law nullifies the 1807 law and, in fact, should be applied. President Trump is ignoring that. He has a attorney general who is a true fascist. I'll let him sue me if he wishes. Barr is essentially saying it's all communists, it's all anarchists, it's all bad, and that the president has the right to do whatever the hell he needs to do to cause law and order to be prevailing in the United States. That's the legal situation as of today. And it's very fluid and it's very much changing. I imagine there'll be lots of lawyers making a lot of money playing around with this. But the reality of the situation is that the President of the United States yesterday had, and this is really important, cleared a peaceful crowd of several thousand people in front of the White House, cleared them using multiple armed forces with full armament, full weaponry, including men on horses, cleared the crowd so that the president could walk two blocks from his location in the White House over to the church where he held up what he said was a Bible, and though I'm sure he's never read it, used it as a prop to say that he as president would invoke the law of 1807 and that he intended to establish by force in every state, whether or not the state governments agreed, intended to establish federal authority and to end the protests. That's what happened yesterday. That's the nut of it.
Now, yeah, it's what he signaled. I don't know that he's actually invoked that law. He certainly is speaking as if he has invoked that law, but well, I don't know that he actually has.
No, I'm assuming he has, but I think your point is a good one. He talks a lot and does a little, and that may simply be that it was a scare tactic. I don't believe that. I actually believe that under Attorney General Barr, he will be moving. I believe this. I do not know that it is a fact. He will be moving U.S. military into certain cities in the next week or less.
We shall see. The reason I wonder, though, I think that he's so dumb, Joe. He's so dumb that he doesn't understand. Yeah. Wait a minute. He's so dumb he doesn't understand that law or its context. I think he's simply issuing threats without any understanding of the legal framework in which he's operating, let alone the constitutional framework. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what that law is or what the hell it means.
Yeah, but Barr does, and Barr told him that was what he could do.
Yeah, well, it certainly appears that that is what he is doing. Oh, boy. Can we back up just a second here? I think there's another piece of context we should introduce here.
Yeah, I want to, before we back up, I want to remind people, this is a law of 1878, ironically designed to keep American soldiers from protecting African Americans who were being slaughtered in the South in the Reconstruction period.
Right. So the president, of course, has been adding his own incendiary voice to all of the stuff that's been going on. On the 28th of May, he tweeted the following. These thugs are dishonoring the memory of George Floyd, and I won't let that happen. Just spoke to Governor Tim Walz. This is Tim Walz of Minnesota, and told him that the military is with him all the way. Any difficulty, and we will assume control. But when the looting starts, the shooting starts. Thank you. Is that nice, that little thank you on the end of that declaration that he just made?
Yeah, and you're going to talk about where that quote came from or not?
I am going to talk about where that quote came from. That particular quote has a very long and very racist and very violent history. It was coined by a chief of police in Miami during the 1960s. He originated that quote, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts." And this police chief was notorious his name was Walter Headley, for his get tough policy during the civil rights era of the 1960s. Miami was notorious as a city in which police would take virtually any excuse to crack down on people of color who were part of that movement. It is a phrase that is steeped in blood and in violence and in the deep racial divide in our country. And for the president to invoke it, again, if he were smarter, I might give him some more credit for signaling to his base. But again, I think he's just really stupid. He heard that phrase someplace, thought it sounded cool, thought maybe that the yahoos who support him would like it, so he dashed it off in a tweet. It's hard to imagine a more incendiary or irresponsible thing for the president of the United States to say in the current context.
Well, I agree with you, but I actually think that he gets fed these lines by Barr. I believe that Barr is now, in effect, the president of the United States for domestic affairs.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong about that.
And Barr serves Trump, and that's the key relationship there. Barr, in fact, got the job as Attorney General by writing a letter saying, I'll do whatever you need to do, I'll do whatever you want, President, and I love you, President, and he got hired.
Yeah, he did. He was he was Trump's guy, and that turned out, I think, to be, from Donald Trump's perspective, a rather astute appointment that he made, because now he has an Attorney General who's entirely compliant, is willing to, as you mentioned, coach the President through this transition to fascism that we seem to be experiencing. And he's also willing to give the President legal and constitutional cover for the things he's doing. Releasing Michael Flynn from his charges is but one example of this. Barr's handling of the Mueller report is another. If you're a guy like Donald Trump and you want to behave as he is behaving, Barr is the kind of guy you want having your back. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, you saw, if you happen to be watching television, when the President had the perfectly calm, perfectly rational, nonviolent demonstrators facing the White House, scattered by the use of multiple armed forces, and including guys on horses. Really, I have to say this. This so much reminds me of the use of Cossack armed mounted troops against people in Russia, particularly against the Jewish people in Russia. It's just almost, I can't believe that somebody didn't notice it. You know what I'm saying? I think maybe people assume in the press that people will remember this. They know what happened that led to the Russian Revolution. But this is that classic behavior. All they needed that they didn't have were sabers to cut people down.
We have two callers online. Two callers.
We have a couple of callers hanging by, and I want to go to them in just a minute. But first, I want to bring this back here to Portland. Portland, over the last several nights, has seen a series of protests in downtown and elsewhere. Those protests have featured violent clashes with police, who have deployed tear gas and flashbangs and other crowd-controlled tactics against the protesters.
I don't agree. You and I actually disagree about this. I do not think the crowds were, I think they were confrontive. I do not think they were violent. I do not know of any instances in which police were injured here in Portland, Oregon.
No. That's not what I'm getting at. You're getting me wrong here. The violence here in Portland was instigated by the police. And there's a lot of documented evidence to support this. I would refer people to a local here in Portland, who goes by the Twitter handle at Mr. Olmos, at MROLMOS, who's done a fantastic job reporting from the front lines of these conflicts with police and documenting their actions throughout. And in a number of his video clips, you can clearly see that the police were the instigators. The police first deployed violent weapons and tactics against the protesters, not the other way around. And that's very important to understand. Now, another thing I want to mention is last night's protests, not just here in Portland, but around the country, were markedly more peaceful than they had been the previous night. And this is why I said at the outset of the show that we need to be very careful in how we speak about this and the conclusions that we draw.
Yeah,
We saw, for example, images here in Portland of a bunch of officers taking a knee in apparent solidarity with the protesters. I would advise people to take this very cautiously until we see police chiefs and police unions issuing statements in support of the protesters and denouncing their department's use of violence and violent tactics. We should view this as nothing more than a PR stunt at this point. Until there's something to back it up, yeah, it's very pretty to see police taking a knee with protesters, but I'm not buying it yet.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, and I think that it is confusing. A lot of things are confusing by when you're not there, and even when you are there. I think it's important to remember that part of this anger stems from things like the Louisville attack on a woman shot in her bed by police who turned off their cameras, their body cameras, and did not have a warrant. They came in and they killed this woman.
They did.
I mean, this is now becoming more and more obvious. As we look at the behavior of the police in many locales, we begin to discover not just an occasional abuse, not just one that makes it into the press, but regular dangerous, racist attacks on African Americans and others. And I want to add one other thing. One of the strategies of Barr is to label demonstrators as communists and anarchists, and to name Antifa as the bad guy in all of this. I think there are people who do not obey the law in the demonstration situation. I also think, separate from that, there are opportunists who are looting and because they have the chance to loot. And I do believe that the looters often turn out to be actually right-wingers.
Yes, and that's, again, another area where we need to tread very carefully. There has been some evidence to suggest that perhaps there are agents provocateurs among the demonstrators, the people willing to throw the first brick so that others will follow. There's some evidence to suggest that, but we really don't have a clear picture of what's going on. So I think we need to be very careful in leveling accusations on that front. However,
you and
that
I just
said,
agree about that, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure we do, but I'm about to qualify what I just said. However, history suggests and evidence suggests that the possibility of agent provocateur among the protesters is a very real one, and we should certainly not rule it out.
Well, I would be amazed if there were none.
Yeah, I would be amazed if there were none also. All too easy to jump from that to a vision of a vast, carefully organized conspiracy across these many protests around the nation.
That's true, and we have to be careful of that. But I also think it's really obvious just from the images that there are opportunists, whatever their ideological motive, who are simply delighted to raid a computer store or raid a jewelry store or whatever.
Indeed. Yeah, indeed. You mentioned Louisville. It's interesting that you did because I was going to go there as well. In the many, many pieces of video that have been collected over the last week, you can see from a couple of days ago of some protesters in Louisville who had assembled a cache of food and water at a public park so that protesters could have something to eat and drink. That cache of supplies was rolled up on and confiscated and emptied out and destroyed by some Louisville police officers who then formed a cordon around those supplies to keep the protesters away, intimidated them with a threat of violence, and destroyed and or made off with that entire stash of supplies. So we're seeing conduct that isn't just violent. It is nakedly authoritarian. It is bullying. It is degrading. It is demeaning. And it is the behavior of a group of people who are exercising power simply because they can. And that's a bad trait in a police officer.
And today, in the New York Times, we have numerous reports of reporters of various stripes, of various publications, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the CNN people who were arrested, all of these people being targeted with less than lethal weapons and being arrested by the police during these demonstrations. These are people clearly marking their bodies with their press credentials and so on, and then being attacked. This is, I think, in large part, a revenge action on the part of the police departments in many locations, and they're punishing the press because they don't like what the press is saying.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And the statement I made a few minutes ago about, you know, until I see police unions and police chiefs coming out and condemning the actions of their officers, I'm not buying these gestures of solidarity. Let's take, for example, the president of the police union in Minneapolis. Last year in October, this man, the president of the Minneapolis Police Union, appeared on stage at a Trump rally with the president, and he thanks the president for liberating the armed forces from law enforcement from the oppression of the Obama years. Now, think about that for a second. He believed that law enforcement officers were oppressed by two terms of an African-American presidency, and he is thanking our white nationalist president for liberating him and his fellow officers. Now, I think this is... Go ahead.
No, I think that's... I think you put your... You're really quite correct. In fact, I have always known... not that individual police officers are necessarily to the left or to the right or whatever, but there is a policy embedded in American law enforcement from way, way back to strike out against any attempt to make social change. And that's what we're seeing a lot of right now. And it's both fear maintaining and it's deliberate and it's large. And now the president is essentially saying, hey, go out there, take over on the federal level the independence of the states and of the cities. If cities and states will not do what I want done, we will move in under the law of 1807 and do it for them.
Yeah, these are terrifying things to hear from the lips of a president of the United States. This is an opportune moment, I think, to point out also that the quasi-military organization of America's law enforcement agencies is a direct descendant of the fugitive slave patrols that were organized in the antebellum South to hunt down and retrieve escaped slaves.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because that's really the historic origin of many police departments in many locations.
Right, indeed. And see, the knee-jerk reaction from a lot of people when we talk about police violence, and this is something you've heard for years and years and years now, is something along the lines of, oh, 99.9% of police officers are good people who are just trying to do their jobs and serve their communities, and it's just a few bad apples that ruin everything. I think that it's clear at this point, and I'm seeing even conservative commentators acknowledge this fact, that what's been going on has been going on for so long and in such a systematic and systemic way that it clearly goes beyond that 0.01%. There are clearly more than a few bad apples embedded in America's police forces. It is clearly a deep part of police culture that is not universal, that is not shared by every police officer, regardless of his or her racial extraction. But it is there. There is a significant culture of racist, reactionary, authoritarian policing in this country. And we are seeing that come out right now in a really, really ugly way.
Well, and I have noticed it just in locally. I knew a guy who, a good guy, wanted to be a police officer, had all the credentials, including military service and so on, but he was rejected because they said he wasn't aggressive enough.
Oh my, well there you have it.
That was in Portland, Oregon. That was probably 10 years ago. But it really did happen, and it's really what's going on, and it's really important. I also have a friend who I will not name because he's still associated with law enforcement, who actually, he was in the gang enforcement team. He actually told me that he was leaving the police department for another kind of law enforcement job because he feared that his colleagues thought he was too easy on African-American youth gangs and that he didn't think he would get back up if it came to a crisis.
Oh, my.
No, that's real. That is, I'm not making it up. I'm not exaggerating. I know this guy. I trust this guy. He's a good man. And he has spoken to me on this, on I can't name his name because he's reporting on it.
Sure.
In a situation where it would be inappropriate for me to tell his name.
Should we take some phone calls?
Yes, please.
Let's do it. Who do we have?
Corey's on the line.
Corey, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Real quick, I just want to bring this up. The image of Derek Chauvin killing George Floyd is the mental imagery is damaging enough, and to me as a person of color. But I also want to bring up the fact that when you look at that image, there's an Asian officer named Tao Tao, who basically stood there while this was happening, and basically he could have at least said, "Hey, man, I've done this before. I've worked in law enforcement as well. I've had to like check my officers, check my quote unquote friends. Like, hey, man, you don't need to do that." The fact that he kind of stood there. And look, I'm not like you guys said. I want to be very careful. I cannot speak to the Asian American community, but when I worked probation in Northern California, I worked with a lot of people who are of Hmong descent, Mongolian descent, and there are tons of issues in that community, the Hmong community. But I also think this goes to anti-blackness. I see a lot of conflating. I see a lot of things people tweeting and people of color. No. Anti-blackness is the word because we as black people cannot assimilate. An Asian person with that whole concept of the model minority, hey, look, we can let you assimilate to a certain degree. But even if you look at what happened just 3 weeks ago with COVID, a lot of the hate crimes that were being directed at Asian people because of COVID. So I can't tell Asian people, and I have tons of Asian friends. I don't want to be that person, but I think there is a apathy, I think, when people don't want to just say, hey, this is anti-blackness. Let's stop using terms. Oh, look what's happening to people of color. No, this is happening to black men. And I think that you have other races that are complicit in that. And to see
I'm actually going to interrupt you because I think this. I think your intention is good, but I think there's a certain danger in any effort to single out any ethnic group for the behavior of some of that ethnic group, particularly alleged behavior. And it concerns me because I don't think this is a fundamental issue. I don't think the fundamental issue is a black-white fight. I think the fundamental issue is authoritarian fascist politics, which is embedded in the historic role of the police as slave chasers. And I think that's where it comes from, and that's its origin, and it has never, ever, ever, ever been halted.
I agree with you, but when you have other people of color who are joining the authoritarians, that's problematic when it's directed at black people.
No, I see what you're saying. I'm not dissing you. I'm just being cautious here.
And I am too. That's what I said. I wanted to be cautious. But Joe, I mean, quite honestly, that image of an Asian cop sort of standing there while this is happening to a black man is not, it's staggering, you know. And look, I like I said, I want to be cautious, and I'm not going to.
Well, I don't. I mean, the fact the guy's Asian to me is pretty much irrelevant. He was one of the people who now, I think, faces indictment.
He got fired. I don't know. He hasn't been arrested yet. But I mean, I get what you're saying. I'm trying to be cautious, but I'm thinking, like I said, as a person of color, I've seen everyone try to conflate the issue, and the issue is of black bodies, and like I said, I'm trying to be careful too. But to see that cop sort of stand there while it's just as damaging as Chauvin to a certain degree, because here you have someone who could actually stop this from happening. Mm-hmm. And look, you like you said, you had friends in law enforcement. I worked in law enforcement too. There's different ranks, you know. But even when I was, you know, where you have a sergeant or a lieutenant, unlawful order is an unlawful order. And humanity is humanity. That guy could have stopped that dude by just turning around and saying, hey, man, that's enough.
I agree. I think the solidarity and the politics of policing is firmly, and this is something I, after many years of experience, ranging from activities in New York City to Portland to San Diego, clearly, really convinces me that there is an authoritarian, even fascist, belief system that dominates police work. I also wanted to bring up, in terms of the Asian issue, which I think is almost irrelevant but important, that in the late 1800s in San Francisco and many other places, Asian Americans were lynched by white mobs in California and so on, and treated very ugly, and it was the assumption that they were taking the work away from Caucasians. And I think we just have to be really careful about race branding anyway.
Oh,
and
I agree
understand
with
where you're
you.
Coming from, but I think it's important that we be very careful about it.
Yeah, and I agree with you. That's why a lot of Asians who left San Francisco and blacks who left San Francisco ended up going to Canada because they were sort of, you know, pushed up. That's why you have these communities. And like I said, I'm being very careful too. I understand what's happened to a certain degree in the Asian community, but the assimilation factor is still, it sort of gets to me because, like I said, I've worked in law enforcement too, and I agree with you. The reason I left law enforcement wasn't because I wasn't filled with enough self-hate as a black man to work in law enforcement. So I totally that's a whole other topic, but that's what I was told. Like, you need to go after black people harder.
I think we'll be able to let you go. There are other people calling. I appreciate where you're coming from. I'm being cautious here and cautioning others. We are in a situation where any branding of people by how they appear, how they look, what their ethnic background is extremely dangerous, and I don't think that the role of the police, which is essentially a repressive role in support of a repressive state, should be turned into something about race. per se.
Gotcha. Hey, listen, man, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Who else do we have?
We have Cassandra.
Cassandra, good morning.
You got a great name, Cassandra.
Thank you. I often feel jinxed because I feel I am the woman that speaks truth and is not heard, and have been for years. I think we need to, and no disrespect to both of you, especially, I believe it was Abe, I'm not sure, maybe it was Joe. One of you just made a point, and I've heard it many times, not just on your show, but in others, that we have all, from the beginning, made fun of the intelligence of this man, this pumpkin who is sitting on our presidential seat.
Oh, yeah, I think he's stupid.
He is incredibly
stupid. He's not a smart man.
But in underestimating him and his intelligence, which there isn't any, we have fallen into a trap, which is to think every single time, no, 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 this can't happen. No, something's going to stop him. No, no, this isn't legal. And every single time for the past 4 years, this man has devastated us. He has wrecked our Constitution. He has deregulated every aspect of our safeties for water, air, you name it, anything, monopoly.
Oh, you're
anything.
Right. You're absolutely right.
And yes, but here's my problem. We need to look at a couple things where this police force is concerned. We need to look at the fact that I have a nephew who's, he was head of the SWAT team down in California at one point, and now he's moved on to a different position. He's trying to become a marshal. Anyway, most police officers, and you just mentioned it, automatically one of the priorities that get them their position is that they come out of the military.
That's
this is automatically
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
An aggressive position instead of police forces that work with populations. They're set up automatically as an antagonistic affront to the populations. They're not working with them, they're there against them. They've taken people who have been we've been at war for the last 20 years, and you're taking young men who have been put into military aggressive stance against, fill in the blank, you know, wherever they've been located, and now you bring them home and you put them in a position where they have another you're directing them to be aggressive towards the population. We take the place of their opponent. And we wonder why, along with, yes, the long history of why police were set up in this country to begin with, you know, the slavery and so forth. And then you add into this a total dictatorial fascist government we are now living in. When we cannot stop someone who is breaking law after law after law in our country, the rule of law no longer applies. And it is not in existence in our country today. Because this man has broken every law, and he has cronies everywhere, including the police force, including those people that are supposed to be there for our protection. They're not. And we have to stop believing that this lack of intelligence is somehow going to benefit us, because it's not. He is not really, he's a puppet. And he's a very powerful puppet, but he's a puppet. And whether it's the Koch brothers, whether it's, you know, Mitch McConnell, and whether it's now the Attorney General, we are being used by our government. Government is supposed to fear the people, not the people fear the government. Yes, I know it's been used many times, that saying, but it's true. And we are no longer in a position to make them fear us. Elections, frankly, while I will vote, I do every time, at this point, it's bogus, in my opinion.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that, the question of bogus.
I know.
But I
just
appreciate
don't
what
see
you
it
say. And I want to affirm that I understand where you're coming from, and I certainly understand you living up to your name. So I want to thank you for the call.
Sorry.
Wait. Thank Cassandra, you. Why do you feel that? Why are you going to not participate in the election this time?
Oh no, no, I will always vote. Always, and I encourage everyone to do it. And yes, I'm a total socialist. And the last time I checked, having him say, oh, we have commies and we have anarchists out there, we need to stop them. It's not illegal to be a communist. It's not illegal to even be an anarchist. And it's definitely not illegal to be a socialist. We are all entitled to our own opinions and belief systems, whether it's religiously, socially, politically, economically. I am against capitalism 100%, 1,000%. But the idea that if you don't participate, you don't have a right to really criticize, I do believe that. Yeah, I'm old enough to believe that one. So I am going to do something I absolutely abhor. I'm going to vote for Joe Biden because we have to get him out if we even make it to the elections. If he doesn't clamp down and instigate total military rule and try to just strong arm us all the way.
Okay. I appreciate you clearing that up.
So I worry
you
about
this
that.
Time around it was bogus. I thought we needed to dig a little deeper. So thank you for clearing that up for us.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
And
thank you
for your program.
Thanks.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. The caller, I think, said something that's really critical to understand in the present moment. And that is that she said the president's words and deeds are turning the American people into the enemy of both law enforcement and quite possibly of uniformed members of the armed services. That is a threshold that we simply cannot afford to cross. If the president asks members of the armed forces to fire upon their fellow citizens, that will be the moment of truth. I suspect that quite a few of them would not follow that order. And I really hope we don't reach the point where we have to test that theory.
Well, I hope you're right, but I have to say two words, Kent State.
Yeah.
Oh, and two more words, Jackson State in the South, which was ignored, where the authorities fired into a dormitory of black students.
Yeah, that you're right. That is an often overlooked incident from that era. Do we have any other callers standing by?
Yes, Joe.
Joe, good morning.
Good morning. I really appreciated both of the last two callers, though I'd called in to boost the signal around the caller before last, the gentleman who was speaking about centering the idea of anti-blackness in our understanding of the power structure and who it flows against. And I think that it's really important for white people to hear this message that's coming from black people again and again, that it's not that there is this ubiquitous other called the people of color. It is that there's this racial hierarchy. And when you talk about, and you're already very in agreement with the consequences of the racialized history of policing in the institution of slavery, it goes to the credit of this argument that we need to center anti-blackness and our understanding of black people's history in this country and in the power structure, because while all races came to this country as slaves sometimes, it was only the people of Africa who were systematically despoiled and treated like a huntable commodity.
I would add indigenous people to that, but you're right, fundamentally.
Well, yes, that too. I mean, and that's another important layer on it, but just because the caller was speaking to anti-blackness. And I just wanted to kind of make that point, because I think he had questionable things to push back that I agreed with, kind of saying, let's be cautious. But that point, I don't think that we can be too cautious or uncautious about, that we need to hear that message and to amplify it, because it affects how we look at the material conditions that are coming together to create these problems that are now spilling over to the whole society. And I'll take more response off the air.
No, I think what you're saying is right. That essentially there are crises within capitalism that are going on right now. That unfortunately we have now the dumb fascist in the leadership, and he's got the support of all sorts of right wingers and all sorts of know nothing people, as well as very sophisticated ruling class people. And it is a very dangerous situation. We don't know that he won't try to stop the election if he thinks he's losing. We don't know that young people and others will end up refusing to vote because they're disappointed in the choice of candidates of the Democratic Party. What we do know is that this is a fascist, and that he is trying to regain his support base by being even more fascistic in his behavior.
Yeah, I would agree with that. He's doubling down. He's doubling down that these gestures and these acts are going to mobilize his base, and they're going to help put him over the hump again in November.
And I over the next few weeks, I will be talking about and probably arguing with a lot of people who love KBOO, or at least listen to KBOO, about what you have to do in elections. Election politics is, in its essence, not the politics of the people. It's the politics of a managed so-called democracy, and you have to figure out within that context what the best course of action is. And unfortunately, very rarely is it a course of action which fits our own personal politics.
Harry on the line.
Yeah, that's very true. I'm sorry, go ahead, engineer. What's that?
We have Harry on the line. Harry.
Harry, good morning.
Oh, greetings, gentlemen, and thank you for taking my call. I thought it was kind of interesting yesterday when the Chinese called out Trump because of the law that the Chinese passed on Hong Kong, the security law that they had. And, of course, we were very upset about this. But what does Trump do? Well, he's going to call out our troops into the U.S. cities.
Well, I want to add a point here. Trump said just now, today, yesterday evening, that he thought it was great that the communist regime in China did the thing at Tiananmen Square. He approved of that.
Huh. Okay, but but the Chinese called them out, so if so now they can move in the security forces come in, but they can actually move into Hong Kong if they feel like they're being threatened. All the demonstrations and stuff, Hong Kong has to really be careful about the demonstrations, and the Chinese law is mostly against people secessionists. Some people want.
Well, I agree with you. I don't want to sidetrack our conversation about the situation with Hong Kong or China, mainland China. Only not because it's wrong, but only because I really think it's important right now that we focus on what's going on in the United States with a president who just said that he would bring troops into any state they refused to behave in the manner that he thought was appropriate toward demonstrators.
Yeah, that's true. But also, another thought. Last year, when Trump got in trouble with the Ukrainians, was sending them anti-tank missiles, right?
Right.
What if the Russians decided, oh, we'll send our demonstrators anti-tank missiles?
Well, I can't imagine that particular scenario, but there is still an unknown role being played by the Putin government in American politics. They did it last time for the presidential election. I am assuming they're doing it today. I don't see good reporting on it, so maybe it's not happening, but I believe it is. And I think it's terribly naive to dismiss the role, in this case, of the kleptocracy that now runs Russia.
Yeah, but you also have to remember we do the same thing to other countries. We overthrow other countries. We assassinate people and everything else. But so the world has every right to interfere in our elections.
Well, no, I don't buy that. I don't buy that as a right, and I don't buy it as a good thing.
Well, so it's right when we overthrow other countries.
Let me make this point. It's very important. All of the intelligence agencies, whatever you think of them, from the CIA, et cetera, are telling us, the citizens of the United States, that Russia is already deeply engaged, and we don't know how and when and where and exactly how it works, deeply engaged in setting up a situation where Trump will once again become president of the United States.
But the CIA is known to lie. They lie to our government. They lie to us.
Yeah,
so if you
want to
believe that, fine. But they have every right to interfere in our elections because we interfere in theirs.
No, I won't buy that.
No. Hey, listen. I think we're going to give some others a chance here before the end.
Okay.
But thank you very much for the call.
Certainly.
Yeah. I mean, because somebody else behaves unethically, it does not justify your own unethical behavior. I think that's a fairly universal maxim that we can invoke at this point. Joe, we got a couple of written comments I would like to address here, if that's all right with you.
Please, yeah.
There are two different comments, and I think they're very closely related. The first comes from Susan. She writes, yesterday, they're writing to the Facebook page, by the way, facebook.com/HeyAndJoe. Yesterday, I chatted with my sister, who lives in Minneapolis, about the death of George Floyd. We iterated between us the oft-mentioned phrase, guilty of being black. My sister replied, no, what it really is guilty of not being white. I think that hits the nail on the head. I think that is a very astute point, and it relates to the other comment we got from Mike. Please talk more about how this revolution will succeed rather than harping on how Trump and Barr have all this supposed power over us. So the question, how does this revolution succeed? I think that's a very astute question.
It's a very astute question. I'm not sure that I don't have a very ugly view of things, and I'm not sure how it's going to succeed.
Well, I've got an answer, admittedly a very hastily cobbled together one, but I think it applies. And here it is. There's two major dimensions of this upheaval right now that need to be addressed, and I think can be addressed. The first is the electoral dimension. How will this revolution succeed? Well, first of all, we need to defeat electorally the would-be dictator who now occupies the White House. Clearly, his administration cannot be suffered to endure if we are going to continue to call ourselves a representative republic. They're simply incompatible with one another. Donald Trump cannot be the president of the United States any longer than the one term to which he has been elected. So that's the electoral dimension to winning this revolution. The other one is social. And that is much, much more difficult. But it comes down to what Susan mentioned in her comment, that it can no longer be considered a crime for Americans not to be white. It can no longer be a marginalizing factor in American life. There's a large chunk of the electorate, a not insignificant chunk of the electorate. Their skins are pale. They are of European descent. They believe this country was made by and for them. They believe that they are the inheritors of all the power and prestige and freedom that entails. And they believe that others are not entitled to participate in it. We've seen this manifest itself in ugly ways for a long time now in this country. It really came to the fore with the election of Barack Obama as president of the United States in modern times. Granted, there are more egregious examples back in the past. But in the modern era, we began to see how ugly this is with the rise of the Tea Party movement and the relentless opposition to Obama and his tactics. We see this illustrated in the Minneapolis police union chief saying how he's so grateful that Obama is gone because now the shackles have been removed from law enforcement. They're out from under the oppressive boot of the black man who occupied illegitimately the White House for 8 years. This is the much larger and much more difficult to surmount obstacle that stands in the way of true social reform in the United States. We are a racist country. We have been from the very beginning. This is the divide. This is the original sin of the United States of America that we have never overcome in all the many years of our existence. And until we dismantle the structure of white privilege and white supremacy, we will never be a truly representative democracy. And here's what it takes. Here's how we win the revolution. And I'm talking to you, white people. It's not enough to simply be
opposed to racism. It's not enough simply to say, I am not a racist. You have to be an anti-racist. You have to actively interrupt and disrupt racist language and behavior when you see it in your life. If that's at the dinner table with your family, so be it. If that's on the street protesting police violence, then so be it. If that's in a court of law defending the rights of marginalized communities, then so be it. It has to be actively interrupted and dismantled by white people. The responsibility is on us. It is us to solve this problem, just as the problem was created by white people.
I agree.
That's
absolutely
what it's going to take.
No, I think you're absolutely right. The other thing I want to add to that is, over this, the great blanket of terror and scariness is the current modern capitalist system. It is a system that is ultimately distorting and destroying the family, destroying the opportunity structure, and making the system essentially oppressive for everyone. And I'm not going to go make a list of such leaders, but they are both modern and traditional, and they exist, and they have power, and they have access to media, and they are actively involved in politics, and they are actively involved in the repression of democracy in America.
We have two callers.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Should we take another call before the end?
Yeah.
All right, let's do that. Who do we have?
Kateri.
Hi. Hi, you guys. This is Kateri. And I would just like to say thank you very much for this topic, for the wonderful women who have called in, for what you're talking about. And I also like to say, Abe, don't ever, what's the saying? Don't ever judge a book by her cover. My great-grandmother was the ruler of Southern Canada and Northern Minnesota, and I have pale skin, but I'm Métis, French Indian, and I am Black Irish. I was listening to the BBC the night before last, and they were talking about what's going on in the States and the support, the empathetic support the people are giving us in Great Britain and in Europe. And what they were talking about, the antecedent of the great-granddaddy of the police system was set up by this guy named Bob. You know, the Bobbies were named after him. I forget his last name.
Robert,
but he was
Peel.
Originally in charge of the repression of the Irish. And so they brought him over from Ireland, and he set up the police department there. And what they did is they surrounded the workers and made sure they went to work on a regular basis for the capitalists. So then it gets transferred over into the United States. What I think is that our president...
Well, you're not saying that Peel came to Europe.
Our president promotes terrorism, and he is the enemy of the people. We have to vote him out.
Amen to that, sister.
Yes, we do.
Thanks.
Thank you for the call.
And you know what, Joe? There's another supreme irony in play through all this, and one we haven't even commented on today, and that is that all of this is unfolding against the backdrop of a global pandemic that has fundamentally altered American life as we know it.
That's true. That's really interesting.
I was glad to see the many minutes of video footage I watched of the protests in Portland. I was glad to see that most protesters were masked. I'm glad to see that, but I am also very fearful of the many more positive cases of COVID-19 that are doubtless going to arise because of these protests across the country. All we need now is some, biblical plagues and maybe a horrendous weather event, and we really will hit the Armageddon trifecta here.
We have a caller.
Well, gee, you really cheered me up with that.
Where do we go from here? Sure.
No. I think I'll make a little summary statement. And my summary statement is two things. First of all, in this situation politically, we cannot let the sort of better lose to the really fascist. It is not in a situation in a democratic, so-called democratic system, our choice of who's going to be the presidential candidate. We have to go with what we get, and we have to make sure, absolutely sure, that the fascist is thrown out of office. And we have to also make sure that we make reforms happen in this society that are both rational and just. And that's something that's a long ways away, and it's a long time coming.
Good caller.
We have to work on it. We have to work on it hard, constantly.
We do. Do we have another caller?
Robbie.
All right, Robbie, I'll probably have to end it with
Good morning.
You. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to, well, to comment quickly. I don't really think we have a democracy in America anymore. I think if you try, at least on the presidential scale, I think when you look at what the establishment did to Bernie Sanders and how the Democrats rigged the vote. But besides that, I mean, I'm not trying to discourage you. I'm just saying that we got Trump here. This is how the plan of America is going. But I wanted to mention the D.C. blackout on Sunday night when they breached the wall and set fire to the guard station on the White House. There was literally a blackout at about 1:30 a.m. The hashtag DC blackout, people couldn't upload their videos at the protest. It became really scary for them, the people that were on the ground there, because they had no cell phone service. They were cut off. And ironically, here's the thing, when you look up DC blackout, hashtag DC blackout, because the moment that the internet came back on, people were like, what happened? What was going on? They were trying to figure it out. Almost immediately, like the next day, yesterday, there was two news stories saying that it was fake bots that were propelling this fake news story of a DC blackout. But when you actually look into it more, there's bots that were, you know, the Twitter account bots that post the same message word for word.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? So that anyway, all these bots went on Twitter and were saying that there was no DC blackout. So it's really weird, but it's something that I wanted to bring attention to people because it's getting real right now. And I don't think that we can vote Trump out. We got to hit the streets, and you either point the finger at the protesters or we point the finger at what we're protesting, and we you know, come together. But anyway, I'll take my answers off here. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. I don't think we're going to have time to address this in depth, but I can tell you right now that the BBC is reporting that there was no DC blackout, that it was a hoax. So clearly this is going to take some more investigation, and I encourage you to do your own research.
Yeah, well, I think it's important. I think one of the things that happens in a situation that's so fluid is there are two things happening. There's manipulation by various propagandists, including the Russians, and right-wingers and so on, and